Stillman and Company, ESPN 102.5, the game. Chase McCabe in for Jared Stillman alongside Mark Howard today. I'm live at Bridgestone Arena. Ian Safar is back at the Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. We'll talk to Trevor Maddich, ESPN college football analyst, at the bottom of the hour, and also Hal Gill a little later on in the show. Quarterbacks in the NFL could be some on the move, and if you believe Adam Schefter of ESPN, he actually tweeted yesterday, and I thought this was pretty telling, Mark. He says, there are roughly 10 quarterbacks locked into starting jobs for opening day of the 2021 NFL season. This is expected to be an unprecedented offseason of QB movement. My over-under of teams changing QBs this offseason is 18. I'll go with the over. What say you to that number? I mean, and we saw it this past offseason where some big-name quarterbacks were changing teams. But he says 18 overall changing.
Yeah, some of them are head-scratchers. You know, Deshaun Watson in Houston. I mean, I understand why he wants to get traded. But how can the McNairs, you know, who own that franchise, let it, you know, progress to this point? Because if they trade, first of all, if they trade Deshaun Watson, great. You know, from a Titans perspective.
Yeah.
You know, that's two less weeks, you know, during the season. We got to worry about him. Yeah, they might occasionally face him wherever he goes. But that to me is crazy. And then even more insane is Aaron Rodgers and the possibility that Green Bay might trade him. That's just not going to happen. He's underpaid. He's the fifth highest paid quarterback in the league. He's $12 million behind Mahomes. Just figure it out. Aaron Rodgers, and I'm not always his biggest fan. He's not great when it comes to body language. He looks like he pouts all the time. But he also has carried that team on his back. He's going to be the MVP this year. So it's insane to me to even entertain the thought of trading him. Why not get, you know, maybe better offensive linemen for him? We sort of saw that in the championship game. And I got news for you. Matt LaFleur didn't exactly rock my world as a head coach.
Nope.
It's easy to look really smart when Aaron Rodgers is your quarterback. But when things heated up, you know, we saw Matt LaFleur look like a coaching lightweight, you know, going up against Bruce Arians and Tampa Bay last weekend. Sorry, but that's the way it looked.
Well,
and the way it's set, yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, the way it's set up in Green Bay, you got Mark Murphy, the president of the Packers, and the way he set it up was to bring LaFleur in and essentially hire his defensive coaching staff. And Mike Pettine didn't exactly, you know, cover himself in glory this past weekend. So it's a weird situation in Green Bay. Other places, yeah. I would give Arthur Smith a year with Matt Ryan because he might be the best thing that ever happened to him. But some of the other places I could certainly see.
Well, it's funny you bring up LaFleur. So yesterday I did this exercise with Ian. I had three quarterbacks and all, or three head coaches, and all I did was read off the record, and then I said who they were. So coach number one in 64 games, 38-26, five playoff appearances with a record of 2-3. Coach number two, 48 games coached in three seasons, so 29-19, four playoff games, 2-2, and then the other one, 26-6 in 32 games, 2-2 in the playoffs. LaFleur is obviously the last one. Sean McDermott, the first one. Mike Vrabel, the second one. And I think that you can make the argument that McDermott and Vrabel have done better jobs with less because they weren't handed Aaron Rodgers. And then the job that LaFleur has done, I don't think he's a great coach either. And I don't think he's really shined all that much, even with Aaron Rodgers. And I think that that's part of the reason why Rodgers might look to try and go elsewhere.
Yeah, but if you're Aaron Rodgers, be careful what you wish for, because anywhere else he goes could be a tough fit. I think sometimes these guys don't really understand what they have. And, you know, with Aaron Rodgers, you did get to the NFC Championship game. Yeah, it wasn't really probably coached as well as you'd like, but that's still the case. And Yeah, you got to start asking Aaron Rodgers. All right, it didn't go well with you and Mike McCarthy there, especially the last few years. If you don't like LaFleur, who are you going to get along with? You know, that's the other part of this. So, you know, I think with Green Bay, you just grin and bear it and just, you know, figure out how to maybe give him another playmaker or two and fortify the offensive line and take another shot. I mean, Rodgers, it looks like he's still got three or four more good years.
Charles Robinson of Yahoo Sports joins Robbie and Rex Road every Tuesday. And he was asked about Aaron Rodgers earlier today. And was it a heat of the moment thing at the in the postgame press conference, or could this really happen? Here's what Robinson had to say.
Here's the deal with Rodgers. Rodgers has been thinking about this for a while. Okay. Like, this is something that he has been doing a slow burn on this. You know, you can go back all the way to Jordan Love, but I think even as the season unfolded, you know, Rodgers knew, I think he was upset that more things weren't done in the off season in terms of improving, you know, the team. They had a more aggressive off season the year before, and that they kind of sat on their hands this last off season. I think that after drafting Jordan Love, and this is natural, any quarterback would have done this in his position, I think Rodgers sat there and looked at his money and said, you know, realistically, how committed are they to me? And then he looks at what happens with Brady and the Buccaneers saying, hey, here's $50 million in guaranteed money. You know your window. This is yours. We're not walking from $50 million in guaranteed money. Well, you know, Rodgers' contract doesn't really guarantee him anything but one more year there. And so in a weird way, he's almost like a coach potentially entering his last year. And you know how coaches feel about that. They don't do that. They want extensions or they want, you know, another year tacked on or some kind of commitment. And I think Rodgers wants that. I think he wants the Packers to look at him. And then frankly, I think I can tell you with some confidence, he's going to sit down with the front office and he's going to say, here's the deal. Here's what my money looks like. I want something figured out that guarantees me the next couple years, at least give me a 2-year window like Tom just got in Tampa. And here are the guys that I want you to consider keeping on the Packers and maybe some guys that I want you to consider potentially pursuing. And I think if the Packers look at him and go, nah, you know, we're not going to do that. We're not going to let you dictate, you know, what the situation is. I think Rodgers is going to tell him, okay, let's figure out a way to part company here. And try to do this as amicably as possible.
Charles Robinson, Yahoo Sports, earlier today on Robbie and Rex Road. And I do wonder, Mark, if the whole drafting of Jordan Love is, even though Robinson said that he's thought about this, did that maybe expedite the feelings, even though they made it back to the NFC Championship game and there were many that wondered, okay, is this even going to work after bringing in Jordan Love?
Yeah, but again, it wasn't like he was a passenger on this bus. He's going to be the league MVP.
Right.
It's just insanity to go down that road. You know, when you start getting into egos and everything else. I think the Packers management with, you know, light of day thinking will give their heads a collective shake and realize that they can give Rodgers the money because he's going to be good for it the next couple of years and then go about the business of improving the team. So what if he's got opinions? I mean, you know, I think sometimes that gets overstated. That's fine that he's got opinions, that he wants to win. They all want to win. But I think it's absolutely crazy to trade a guy like Rodgers under those circumstances. And listen, you know, Rodgers, a complicated man to say the least, you know, cut off most of his family. Yeah. He's still not talking to most of his family. It's hard to explain Aaron Rodgers, but when he gets between the lines, he's still pretty good. And that's to me, the bottom line.
Yeah. And I do wonder too, because Tom Brady in the last few years, he's been in control of, you know, what he wanted to do. He proved it this year that with the way his contract was set up, he was like, you know what, I think it's time, and I'm done in New England. Had a great ride, got 6 rings out of it, but I'm ready to go and still play, but take on another challenge. So I do think that factors in with Rodgers that he's seen what Tom Brady has done, and he's been able to now go in 1 year and take his new team to the Super Bowl, and there's some of those challenges. But I don't know if it would be the right move. It's like you said earlier, it's be careful what you wish for if you're Aaron Rodgers. Now, with all that said, because of the power that players have nowadays and that number of 18 being thrown out there that all these quarterbacks could be on the move, I do think he is going to move. I'm not saying it's necessarily the right move, but I do think it's going to happen. He will be somewhere else next season.
I disagree. I think he's staying put. I think you're committing professional malpractice if you let him walk away. I think it's just insane to even think that. So some of these other quarterbacks are leaving franchises, you know, whose fortunes have fallen over the last year or so. That's understandable. But Aaron Rodgers, come on. I mean, seriously.
Mark says get over it, Aaron.
I mean, you know, listen, Mark Murphy is an egotistical guy. You know, he wants to be the hand that rocks the cradle. You know, John Gutekunst is the general manager, and he doesn't have a lot of power. He reports to Murphy like everybody else does. The hierarchical structure at Green Bay isn't the healthiest, but they're still winning, and I just think it's crazy to break it all up.
Rodgers is not the only quarterback that could potentially be on the move. We've already mentioned Deshaun Watson, but what about another team that's looking for a quarterback in the AFC South? Who might they land? We'll discuss that when we come back. We'll take your calls and texts as well on this. 615-737-1025. Is all this movement good for the league? We'll discuss that. Stillman & Company, Chase McKay, Mark Howard here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
I think Matt Stafford has a good 2 to 3 years of really high level. Like, I think he's going to make a massive difference, you know, where he lands. It all depends. Like, we'll see. I think the Colts, the interesting thing when you talk about the veterans and some of these other teams with quarterbacks and what are they going to do? And, you know, even with the cap problems, maybe the Saints, you know, once Drew retires, maybe the Saints will want to, you know, take a shot at another quarterback. And I know Sean Payton really likes Matt Stafford a lot. They're a little bit hogtied by their cap situation. But, you know, San Francisco, I think San Francisco will probably kick the tires on, or, you know, probably right now is having those conversations about Matt Stafford. You know, I think the Colts make the most sense because they have to be aggressive about filling a starting quarterback spot. They have the salary cap space, and they have the window. And that's definitely going to be something that I think Matt Stafford is looking for, the window, the ability to go in and compete for a Super Bowl in 2021, 2022, 2023, and I think that's the Colts. So it makes sense that's the most sensible team to have lined up, particularly given that, you know, Carson Wentz isn't going anywhere in Philly, and I think they prioritize Matt Stafford over Carson Wentz anyway. But the Colts, I think, hold the key to what's going to happen with some of the veteran quarterback moves in the offseason.
Charles Robinson, Yahoo Sports, on Robbie and Rex Road this morning, addressing a team in the AFC South and potentially putting Matt Stafford there. And I'll tell you, Chase McKay, Mark Howard here on Stillman & Company. I'll tell you, Mark, from a football, just as a football fan, I love the idea of Matt Stafford and Frank Reich together with that offensive line and with some of those players that he would have to work with and to throw to, and then the defense to back it all up. As a Titans fan, I hate it because you'd have to go up against that team twice a year, a team that has constantly had your number in history. But I do think Matt Stafford, he's a talented quarterback. He's just always been on bad teams.
You know, when you tease this segment, in my mind, I had this really profound take on Matt Stafford that you were going to say, cutting edge, refreshing. And Charles Robinson and you pretty much said it all. I think it almost looks like it's fate. And I think people around the NFL would love to see Matt Stafford land on his feet in Indianapolis and finally play behind an offensive line that can block somebody and have, his receiving core in Detroit at times was pretty good, but he's got a chance to be on a team that can really do some damage. And you're right. I mean, from a just a football fan standpoint, Matt Stafford to Indianapolis makes incredible sense and would be kind of cool to see, you know, how it plays out. But, you know, this is a guy who has absolutely, you know, stood out, you know, on some horrible teams.
Yeah.
He's high up in the league in comeback wins. He's just one of those guys that if you put the right cast around him, could be a championship quarterback. So, yeah, I emphatically agree that if I'm the Colts, if I'm Chris Ballard, you know, their GM, that's who I'm looking at.
Yeah, I think he'd be their first choice because it just makes so much sense. Because think about in the Super Bowl era, we were talking about this earlier on the midday show, of the quarterbacks that have, you know, been in the category of they're solid, but they're not elite, they're not great, but they've won a Super Bowl. Trent Dilfer comes to mind of what he did with Baltimore and the defense that they had, and then a guy that joined the midday show, Darren Donick and Chase at noon today, Brad Johnson. Brad Johnson won a Super Bowl with Tampa Bay. Again, solid quarterbacks, but not going to carry the team on their shoulders, not going to blow you away. Matt Stafford, in my opinion, is the opposite of, you know, I'm not going to say elite. Maybe he could have been had he been on the right teams with the right coaches, but I think he's really good. I think he's much better than he's been shown because of the teams that he's been on, and he deserves a chance. He deserves to go play for a good team and try and show what he can do.
No, absolutely. I mean, we saw even this year when they came to Nissan Stadium. Stafford was hurt, didn't practice all week, and gave a pretty representative performance given the ineptitude around him. I was still pretty impressed that this is a guy, you know, who was out there playing. You know, they had nothing on the line. He was hurt, but he was a pro. I mean, he showed up and played on Sunday and played pretty effectively. So, yeah, it'd be kind of neat to see him go to a good team.
So you add him
to
the mix.
My dog agrees.
Yeah, I think spot on there. You add him to the mix in the AFC South. So then you go, you know, the Titans aren't changing quarterbacks. So Ryan Tannehill, the quarterback here. You know that you're going to have Trevor Lawrence in Jacksonville. And then you add Matt Stafford to Indy. What do you think realistically happens with Houston? In my opinion, like you said earlier, if you're the McNayers, you don't do it. You figure out how to make it work. You bring in the new coach. You try and smooth things over. Deshaun Watson is adamant that he wants out of there. So let's say he gets his wish, and he is out of there. What's the replacement? Is it a trade package with the Jets that sends Sam Darnold back your way and you try and build around him, or are they going to try and piecemeal something together?
Well, he could go to Miami and in a deal for Tua and draft picks. You know, there are a lot of different places he can go because you trade for Deshaun Watson, you know, all of a sudden you become a playoff and maybe even Super Bowl contender. So who knows, you know, where he's going to go. But, yeah, the Jets are certainly one of those teams. They've got the draft capital to make the deal. And the one thing Houston needs, I mean, Bill O'Brien just bankrupted them in terms of draft capital. So this is something Houston badly needs. So if they are going to trade Watson, it's going to be for a passel of draft picks.
But if I'm Deshaun Watson, I get that, you know, why he wants out of there. It's because of ownership, and I don't think that you know, that ownership situation is exactly a good one. It seems like a rudderless ship there in Houston. But are you really going to go to, you know, Woody Johnson and the Jets? You think that's much better to leave Houston and go there? Yeah, granted, I like the coach hire that they made and Robert Saleh, but it's still the Jets. They haven't had, you know, they haven't been an organization that's just showed you a ton of success in the last few years. So I don't know if that would really be the right fit for him. Miami's interesting, even though I'm not ready to give up on Tua after, you know, a half season, a rookie year, a weird year where you don't get the type of work with rookies like you have in years past. I'm not ready to say he's going to turn it around and be this elite NFL quarterback, but I'm just saying I'm not ready to give up on him just yet.
It's really kind of crazy how they kind of turned on Tua at the end of the year. I just think, you know, be careful about making evaluations after 1 year.
Right. You know,
that to me is dangerous. But, you know, I could listen, if you got a chance to swap Tua, you know, for Deshaun Watson, and the Dolphins have a bunch of draft picks, why not? I mean, you're upgrading the position. Tua might end up being a really good quarterback, but you know what you're getting in Watson. The only thing about Brian Flores is he's a little – got to be a little squirrely the way he keeps blowing his staff up. I don't understand that. And you know, people around the league have raised eyebrows about it. But whatever the case, Chase, anywhere you trade Watson, it's not necessarily going to be to a good team. The Dolphins are that anomaly – that holds a lot of draft picks and became a playoff caliber team. But any other team that holds a lot of picks has likely bottomed out, and that's why, you know, they've got all the picks. So if you're Deshaun Watson, you're right. Be careful what you wish for.
And you know, to kind of wrap up this conversation of, you know, Adam Schefter said the over under of quarterback movement is going to be 18, and he would take the over. We've seen in the NBA that players have shown that they have power, and if they're unhappy in a situation, they can go about it whatever they want, pout, and eventually they get their way. We're seeing some of that, at least on the surface, with NFL quarterbacks. And my question here is that good for the league to have this type of movement? If you have these franchise guys, you know, because – so many times before, if a quarterback or any player for that matter was moving, it was, you know, usually because it was just time, they weren't very good and weren't fitting. But Deshaun Watson is in his prime. He's a franchise player, and he's wanting to move. Is it good to the league? Get good for the league to have this type of movement?
Yeah, I've always felt like players shouldn't try to be coaches. Players shouldn't try to be general managers. You know, what does Crispy always say? Players, you know, dancers dance, singers sing, do your job. Okay, I don't mind a player having a voice, having an opinion. But, you know, Deshaun Watson to me, at least in my opinion, has carried it a little too far. Yeah, there are players around the league that are like, you go, guy. You know, you should have an opinion. You should be helping pick the general manager and coach. No, he shouldn't.
No.
Yeah, and to give him that kind of power is dangerous. We've seen it before. If players start, you know, picking coaches and executives, you get real dysfunction in your organization. There should be enough trust for the player, you know, and the ownership that they're going to bring in the right people. I just think that you keep the player maybe, you know, in the loop. But I don't think a player should be making those decisions. I just don't. And I think you create an unhealthy situation. And at this point, Watson has him over a barrel. I mean, he really does. He wants Eric Bieniemy to be his coach. I don't know if it's headed that way. It's looking to me a lot like Leslie Frazier. But who knows? And my old friend David Culley, very happy that he's getting interviewed. He's been in the league for a long time. He's in Baltimore now. But David's a really good coach, you know, Tennessee guy. But I don't know what direction the selection process is going.
Yeah, it's certainly going to be interesting because Bieniemy is a name, as you mentioned, that's still out there. So we'll see how it all shakes out and how the Titans division is going to look from a quarterback standpoint when it's all said and done. Tune in to Robbie and Rexford every weekday morning on Preds Game Day this season for your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click and win a prize pack brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. Your next chance to participate is tomorrow morning at 9:45 on Robbie and Rexford. When we come back, we'll talk to Trevor Maddich. He's the college football analyst for ESPN. We'll do that here on Stillman & Company. Chase McKay, Mark Howard, in for Jared today, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Stillman & Company, ESPN 102.5, The Game, streaming on The Game Nashville app. Chase McCabe, Mark Howard in for Jared Stillman today. And as always on Tuesdays at this time, we say hello to Trevor Maddich, ESPN college football analyst, brought to you by Houston Clinic Orthopedics. Win experience matters. Trev, how are you?
I'm great, Chase. How are you doing?
Doing fantastic. It's good to talk to you as always. And we will start in Knoxville. I know when everything was going down, you were on with Jared talking about all the moves. Danny White, the athletic director, I love the hire. I think it's about as close to a home run as you can get. And I feel like that the fans are going to be able to trust him to actually get this thing right. What do you think?
I think he's about as close to a home run hire as they possibly could have gotten. He has been phenomenal, not just at UCF, but at Buffalo before that and at other places before that. And at both UCF and Buffalo, he's done what Tennessee fans want him to do here. At Buffalo, he elevated their whole athletic department, but especially football. He hired the coaching staff that has Buffalo now one of the best teams in the group of five. He goes to UCF, and this is a program that was 0-12. He hires Scott Frost to be the head coach, and a couple years later, they're 13-0. And he didn't just do all those things. And by the way, also the men's basketball program in the 2019 March Madness in the second round lost by 1 point to Duke. And other athletic teams at UCF have also improved under his watch, so he's not a one-trick pony. And beyond his ability to do that, he's got such a fire and a spark to him. He's amazingly competitive, and he loves to mix it up. He enjoys the fight, and he will not back down. When UCF went undefeated and beat Auburn, I think it was the Sugar Bowl, one obscure national championship voting organization that was recognized by the NCAA voted UCF as number one, the national champion. So he came out swinging. He gave national championship rings to all of his guys. He had a national championship parade in town, and he declared that they were the national champions. And anybody that said otherwise, he fought. He fought him publicly, and I think that energizes an entire athletic department because he sets the tone. And so he leads from the front. I think this is a guy that is absolutely phenomenal for this point in time for Tennessee.
So now he is tasked with finding the next football coach, and something that we were talking about earlier on in the show, is this job, the head football coach at Tennessee, better, more attractive, however you want to put it, now than it was 3 years ago, simply because Philip Fulmer is out of the way? He's you're not standing in that shadow anymore of Philip Fulmer. What do you say?
I think a lot of people would agree with that. I would say that it's better now than it was before the hire of Danny White, because of the hire of Danny White as the new athletic director. The thing that you need if you're a head coach coming into this mess is to know two things. One is that you're going to have the athletic director support you, fight for you with the administration, fight for you with the boosters. Make sure that he will give you what you need, and then not just walk away and let you run with it, but he will support you behind the scenes in all of those things. Danny White will do that. That's what his history has been. The second thing that he needs, beyond just the support, is to know that Danny White will handle the politics, at least some of the politics. Part of the problem that Tennessee is perceived to have is that there are too many forces pulling in too many different directions. So you get different coaches hired. I mean, how many were they? Had four coaches hired in the last, 10 years, something like that. It's been crazy. And it seems like you've got one side pulling for this coach. That guy fails. The other side wins on the next coaching hire. That guy fails. The other side wins on the next. That's the perception. And if you're a coach considering Tennessee, you don't want to come to a place where you're predestined to fail, not if you have options in other places. Well, the hiring of Danny White, I think, puts some insulation between you as the head coach and some of those political forces, and will allow you to do the things that need to be done on the field without being stretched out and pulled and drawn and quartered in different directions by the politics of the University of Tennessee, or at least that's the perception that needs to be resolved among coaches that will come in. So I think just this one hire solves a whole bunch of problems and creates a foundation that maybe, just maybe, they can solve this hot mess that is Tennessee football.
Mark?
Speaking to Trevor Maddich, college football analyst for ESPN, Trevor, for years has been drilled in our heads that the key to coaching success is continuity. And obviously Dabo Swinney has it at Clemson. But what about Nick Saban, who seems to change his coaching staff yearly, and it doesn't seem to affect him at all?
I know. Isn't that crazy, Mark? I mean, that just seems like the antithesis of continuity. There's a couple of reasons, though, why that hasn't affected Saban. One is that the continuity of scheme and terminology and philosophy does remain the same. So he'll bring in a new offensive coordinator. And that offensive coordinator needs to learn what Saban wants him to do and use the same terminology that the Bama players have had since they arrived there as true freshmen. So the new offensive coordinator needs to learn the new stuff and then put his stamp on it so that there's continuity and players aren't learning new systems and new terminology. And, you know, you used to call this peaches. We're now going to call that buffaloes, right? And all of a sudden, guys have to learn all these new languages. Well, they don't. Same way with the new defensive coordinators. They learn Saban style, Saban's terminology, and there's continuity from that standpoint for the players. But with a mix of new ideas being thrown in as well and a new way of looking at things, which more often than not has really helped Alabama. So that's one of the reasons that it's been that way. But when you look at Saban, though, look at what he's just done. Saban has now brought in two coaches who were head coaches in the NFL last year, Bill O'Brien of Houston and Doug Marrone of Jacksonville, to be assistants. And nobody bats an eye. That's just normal. And Saban is not threatened by having those guys there, former NFL head coaches, that may threaten him. And that's one of the reasons it works so well also. Saban is the most safe head coach in the history of college football head coaches. And he's able to bring in amazing talent year after year after year when the former amazing talent left to go do other things and still not be threatened and still have his way be what occurs there. So these are reasons that the coaching staff turnover has not been overall a problem year in and year out.
Getting back to the Tennessee coaching search, how do you think that job is viewed by the majority of coaches and maybe prospective candidates around the country?
Chase, I think that there's a lot of trepidation. I think there's two kinds of coaches out there, really, maybe three. One is the ones that just care about the money. There's not very many of those, but you don't want to attract that guy because you'll pay him enough to come there when nobody else will because you're such a hot mess. So you don't want that guy. Then there's the guys that don't have any other options, and you make them an offer, and they come. You don't want that guy either. You want the guy that has a lot of options and chooses to come to you. And I think really until the hiring of Danny White, those guys would be very reluctant to come to the University of Tennessee because what you don't want to do is come into a high-profile situation and fail because then you have to go coach with Nick Saban for a couple of years and resuscitate your career and then try again somewhere, right? Well, you know, you don't want to be in that position. And I go back to Clark Lee, the new head coach of Vanderbilt, coming from Notre Dame as a defensive coordinator. He was making, I think, $2.5 million a year, a lot of money, as a D coordinator at Notre Dame. He was seen as one of the bright up-and-coming future head coaches. He could have stayed at Notre Dame as long as he wanted until the great opportunity arose that he would then take where he could go and succeed right off the bat. And he came to Vanderbilt. Now, I get it. He played at Vanderbilt. He's from here. This is home to him. I get that. But for his first head coaching position at this level to come to Vanderbilt, what does that tell you? It tells you that Vanderbilt sold him, not the other way around. That the way Vanderbilt would support him meshed with what he needed and what he knew had to happen in order for him to have success. And so that's what Tennessee has to do. They need to convince coaches that have other options that they will support him and he can have success here. And if they don't do that, they're either getting a guy that wants the money or a guy that has no other choice. So really, it's Tennessee that's being interviewed more than the new head coach being interviewed.
We'll have much more with Trevor Maddich when we come back. More on the Tennessee coaching search. He's brought to you by Houston Clinic Orthopedics. When experience matters, it's Stillman & Company. Chase McKay, Mark Howard, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Yes, it is. Stillman & Company, Chase McCabe at Bridgestone Arena alongside Mark Howard. In for Jared Stillman today, Trevor Maddich, brought to you by Houston Clinic Orthopedics. When experience matters, talking about college football and most notably the Tennessee coaching search as Danny White tries to find his man. And, Trevor, you mentioned selling Tennessee, selling the program. And not only does Danny White have to do that to his next head coach like you were talking about, but the next head coach is then going to have to do that to the players that are there to try and keep them there with the transfer portal the way it is right now and potential recruits, and then even trying to lure some players out of the transfer portal. Do you think that a coach that has Power 5 experience would be better equipped for that, or does it matter if they're an up-and-comer or a Power 5 guy?
I don't think it matters. It just has to be the right guy. And it has to be the right fit. He needs to be someone that can communicate to the players, that they can relate to, that they can believe in, and not be a BS artist, someone that comes out and says all the right things and has all the right slogans. The players will look at that and shake their head. I mean, BS meters among players anymore is pretty finely tuned. So it's got to be a guy that's got a lot of sincerity as well. That's why P.J. Fleck at Minnesota, all the crazy stuff he has, row the boat, all the stuff he has. From the outside looking in, it seems like a bunch of gimmicks, but when you talk to those players, they fiercely defend that because they have bought in completely because P.J. Fleck is the guy that they relate to. So that's what it needs to be. And really, there's a couple of features that the new coach for Tennessee needs to have. First of all, he needs to be a strong leader to make sure that everybody's pulling the wagon in the same direction. He needs to have a clear vision of what he wants to do and not let anybody intrude on him. He needs to be a great identifier of talent, of diamonds in the rough. Tennessee, crazily, is still recruiting decently. I mean, that right now they're 14th in the nation in recruiting rankings. They've got 21 guys that are signed, give or take, depending on things that come and go. And so they're third behind Georgia and Florida in recruiting in the SEC East. And so that's not a terrible place to be. The problem is you've got a whole bunch of guys that have left because of the transfer portal. So that's not accounted for in that. So, you know, the future looks like there'll be some good players to build from. The present looks like it's gotten a lot weaker. But though the new coach needs to be able to find those diamonds in the rough and then develop them. And that's the other thing. That's what Butch Jones wasn't able to get done here. Butch Jones brought in a lot of terrific recruits that have gone on to some really good NFL moments and careers. You know, Alvin Kamara of the Saints is the one that stands out to everybody, but there's other guys too that didn't really splash under Butch Jones in Tennessee because they just weren't developed. He wasn't able to use them the way that you would, that the NFL has been able to use them. So that's the other thing that the new coach needs to be able to do. He needs to be a strong leader, needs to be able to identify those recruits that other schools might overlook, and then needs to develop them into effective college football players. And succeeding at those things will bring the wins that will bring a higher level of recruiting down the road. But without that, if he just expects to out-recruit Nick Saban, well, forget that. That ain't going to happen. So first you need to be a fantastic developer. And I would have this comparison going back to Butch Jones. Butch Jones in the Group of Five did really well. That's one of the reasons that Tennessee hired him. You know, you look at Cincinnati, for example. Man, he was phenomenal as a coach there. He was a great recruiter. And so he was able to get better recruits into Cincinnati and some of the other places he coached at the smaller levels than his opponents, and that's enough at that level. But at this level, getting in really good recruits is not enough. You need the leadership, you need the culture, you need all of the things that Saban has set the standard for in the SEC, and Butch Jones wasn't able to put that together in a way that would maximize his available talent. The next head coach needs to be able to do that at a high level.
Along those lines, Trev, when a coach is interviewing with an athletic director, and, you know, so many times you hear they've put their staff together, they know who they're going to bring with them if they get the job. In reality, how important is it for an AD to hear that? Because when I look at it, I say, well, that's a plan, and I want a guy that has a plan.
Yep, he's got to have that plan. And that's where a lot of very good coordinators have faltered and why they haven't been able to be head coaches, because they're outstanding at coaching, right? But then they get into the interview. Everybody's excited to hear what he's going to say. and they don't have the PowerPoint presentation that's convincing. They don't have the plan of what to do beyond the X's and O's of how to develop a program and how to deal with problems that a CEO head coach needs to deal with. And so those coordinators end up going back to the X's and O's, and they excel at coaching on the field. And so those are the kinds of things that a head coach needs to be impressed about. There's one guy I'm thinking of in particular who I don't want to say his name because he's still out there. But he, as an offensive coordinator, coached a bunch of guys that went on to phenomenal success in college and in the NFL. Heisman Trophy candidates, Heisman Trophy winners that he coached, at least one anyway. But every time he got into a meeting with an athletic director to be a potential head coach, he wasn't impressive in the meeting. And I think he just thought that, hey, his success as a coordinator should speak for itself. Well, guess what? It doesn't. Interviewing as a potential head coach is a skill unto itself. And it's one of the reasons that when you look at minority hiring head coaches, there's so much emphasis placed on getting guys in a position to be able to interview. Because if you don't interview well, then you may be a fantastic head coaching candidate, but you won't be able to show it. So that's one of the things that the prospective head coach needs to do.
Mark?
How much has the transfer portal really changed the game in terms of roster construction and just the way, you know, coaches look at their rosters?
Well, it's nuts. It can be devastating like it is here. At Mississippi State, a whole bunch of guys enter the transfer portal. At Ole Miss, when Lane Kiffin came in, a bunch of guys were in the transfer portal. When the previous coach was fired, came out of the transfer portal to play for Lane Kiffin. And so, you know, it can be good, it can be bad. I think overall, for coaches, they hate it. Even though they can bring in guys to fill positions that they need that they weren't able to fill with recruiting, you don't know who you're going to lose. And that creates holes in your roster. But I think for the players, it's pretty fantastic. And for the fans, it's beyond fantastic. The players just have to use it right. You know, you look at guys like Justin Fields of Ohio State, transferred from Georgia, and people look at that. They look at, you know, the OG of transfers. It wasn't the portal necessarily, but when Russell Wilson transferred from NC State to Wisconsin, you know, people say, let me be that. A lot of quarterbacks in other positions that transfer don't work out. But if they pick and choose their spots wisely, look at what happens. I mean, we wouldn't have known how awesome Justin Fields is had he not transferred out of Georgia. He'd have played behind Jake Fromm, right? We wouldn't have known. And there are a lot of quarterbacks like that that we just would not have known. Look at two consecutive Heisman Trophy winning transfer quarterbacks at Oklahoma. Baker Mayfield transferred from Texas Tech and Kyler Murray transferred from Texas A&M, right? Well, those guys weren't going to win the Heisman Trophy at those places. They weren't. They come to Oklahoma. The opportunity was right. It was a good fit. They won the Heisman, and college football fans got to watch all-timers of fantastic seasons. So coaches hate it because of all the variables that are involved, but I think overall for college football fans, it opens up the opportunity to be able to see players they otherwise wouldn't have been able to see.
What do you make about Jim Harbaugh's situation at Michigan? A lot of people thought he might get fired. Instead, new contract, modified contract, and he also blows his staff up.
Yeah, modified contract. He took less money. He was making, what, $9 million or something like that? It was just insane. He took less money, which was reasonable. And blowing the staff up had to do because big changes need to happen. And the truth of it is, the head coach is not on the field coaching everybody. He's not developing everybody. He's bringing in assistants who then do most of the development. You know, Nick Saban will coach the defensive backs. You know, Dabo will help with receivers and things like that. But Jim Harbaugh, you know, is not to blame for all the problems there, except that the guys that he brought in weren't able to come together and do things that would be successful. I think right now having him there is fine. It would have been bad for Michigan to fire him. He's a quintessential Michigan man. It would have been exceptionally ugly to dump him, right? I kind of thought that Harbaugh would kind of step away, and they would both thank each other for the great progress that they made, quote unquote, and then move in a different direction so they wouldn't have to deal with that kind of ugliness. But instead, they re-signed him, and that's fine. I'm not as down on Harbaugh as most people are. But I think that what's hurting them now is that the state of Michigan sent the memo to the university president of Michigan that suggested that they should step back athletic activity because apparently five people tested positive for the more virulent COVID strain that is found now in the UK. And even though those five people were not in contact with most of the other people in the athletic department and players, they shut down athletic department activity. That hurts Harbaugh because they're trying to get ready for spring practice. Guys are working out. Guys are being coached. And so, you know, he's kind of behind the eight ball again a little bit here. But I think that, you know, he's got to figure out how to overcome Ohio State. And, you know, the problem that he's had the last couple of years is that he has moved away from that ceiling of the Buckeyes, not closer to it, while Michigan fans have been watching teams like Indiana moving closer to Ohio State. And that's what really galls people. So he needs to show clear progress or the drama surrounding his program will never abate.
He is Trevor Maddich, ESPN College Football Analyst. Trevor, appreciate the time as always. Good to talk to you.
All right, thanks, guys. You too.
He's brought to you by Houston Clinic Orthopedics. Win experience matters. We'll have much more coming here on Stillman & Company. Chase McCabe, Mark Howard in for Jared today here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.